ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Bhagavad Gita Introduction, page 13, paragraph 2. How Krishna is acting in different potencies is also explained in Bhagavad Gita. This phenomenal world, the material world in which we are placed, is also complete in itself, because the 24 elements of which this material universe is a temporary manifestation. According to Shankya philosophy, are completely adjusted to produce complete resources, which are necessary for the maintenance and subsistence of this universe. There is nothing extraneous, nor is there anything needed. This manifestation has its own time, fixed by the energy of the Supreme Whole, and when its time is complete, these temporary manifestations will be annihilated by the complete arrangement of the complete. There is complete facility for the small complete units, namely the living entities, to realize the complete, and all sorts of incompleteness are experienced due to incomplete knowledge of the complete. So Bhagavad Gita contains the complete knowledge of Vedic wisdom. You see that Srila Prabhupada is then explaining. Basically, this is establishing the nature and the need of the whole Bhagavad Gita and the concepts that are here in the Bhagavad Gita. So first Prabhupada has established that the need for this Gita, right? So many Gitas are there. This Gita is necessary because only this one establishes the spirit of Gita. So the spirit means Krishna is the Supreme Lord. That's the essential point. But then Krishna, he is the teacher of Gita. So that means the next thing is, who is the student? You can't have a complete proper teacher without proper student. Knowledge will not be transmitted if there is no proper student. So Arjuna is established as a proper student, because he's a devotee. Then various kinds of devotees are there. He is a devotee in friendship. And then, so his mood is he accepts Krishna as the Supreme Lord. So that's the thing that a devotee will do. Others will not accept him as the Supreme Lord. So first, the basic element is that one has to accept what Krishna says. Then one has to accept him as the Supreme Lord. So that's the further step. So then that establishes the whole spirit behind the Bhagavad Gita. So it establishes the devotee, it establishes the Lord, and it establishes this connection between them by the process of transference of knowledge. So this is the proper way to receive transcendental knowledge, because the Bhagavad Gita has been written by Prabhupada for the purpose that we understand our relationship with the Lord. So we have to understand who is Krishna, where this knowledge has come from, what is his purpose, and who is fit to receive it. So then next, after this has been established, then Prabhupada moves into the detail of the Gita itself. That in here, that what is he teaching? Okay, we've established Krishna is there as the Lord, as the perfect teacher. We've established Arjuna as the perfect student. And now we are establishing what is the Gita itself. What is it that it has that is special, unique? Why we should listen to Gita? So then the Gita is then establishing the purpose of human life to develop that relationship with the Lord. So the knowledge to understand this then is broken down into five: the Lord, the living entity, the material energy, time, and karma. So if you know these five, you know knowledge. You know everything. This is called sambandhigyan. You understand this, then you understand what is knowledge. Generally, we have a tendency to think, here is, introduction, so it's some basic points, or even Bhagavad Gita, basic points. Bhagavatam is more deep. Chaitanya Charitamrita, more deep than so many other literatures by the Acharyas, more deep. So Gita is just, so we've read it, yes, like we hear Hindus say. You talk to them about Gita. Yes, yes, when I was 12, I read the Gita. I've heard that so many times. Like that. It's something basic, but also devotees. It's basic. Oh, we've heard we're not this body so many times. Well, let's hear something new, refreshing, something, it's just like, because we get old, spiritual knowledge gets old and tasteless. So you have to have something new and fresh, right? So it has to be something different. But actually, this is the key. You have to know, if you want to get somewhere, you have to know the essence first. Right? Like if I explain to you, okay, you should go to this place. Oh, what place is that? No, I'll explain to you everything. First you go up here, see these mats, there's three mats here. So you go down these three mats. Not the next two over there, those ones there, and you see there's one over there, and there's one back there, and there's a door over there. You don't want to go out there. You want to go down this way. Yeah, but where am I going? Don't worry about that. You go down here. No, the first thing is say, you're going to go to the temple. Right? You should go, now it's time for arti, you should go for the darshan. Right? Okay. Then, how do we do that? Then you go down this way, around here, like that. So, Gita is giving you the exact essence of spiritual life. If at any time in your practice or study of spiritual life, you forget these teachings, then you don't have spiritual life. Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, no other literature will work. Absolutely cannot work. It's based on this. It's like saying you'll build a house without a foundation. Without a first floor, second floor. Well, I like the top floors, tenth. We'll start from the 10th floor up. It can't happen. So all it is that these other literatures expand the same points. They expand. So naturally, as they expand, they may take different flavors, moods. The depth of the realization of the person who is studying is deeper, so it can be explained in a more variety of ways, or in more technical ways, or more subtle ways. But the principle doesn't change. The principle is the same. So when these elements are given, then you have everything. Therefore, we see it goes through Krishna, the living entity, right? Then it's going through the material energy. Now it's going through Krishna's potencies. So this is, we see that there's a very typical, very full definition of the sambandhigyan. So this covers all these areas. Who is Krishna? His potencies, his rasa, the living entities, the condition, the transcendental. Then the material energy. These are all covered. And if you know that, then you know relationship. Right? Then you have knowledge. If you don't know these three, one does not have knowledge. One cannot count it as knowledge. One may know so many sciences. He may know astrology, he may know Ayurveda, but he doesn't know. He's actually ignorant. Unless he understands these points, you cannot understand those points. Because those points are based on these points. It's a very, very fundamental things that are being given here. Otherwise, tendency is you'll think introduction. We're going through the introduction. Nobody gives class on introduction. Prabhupada never gave class on introduction. So what's the need of the introduction? But the point is the whole Gita is being, the whole essence of the Gita is being given in this introduction. You read this introduction, you know all the knowledge is given in the Gita. So here in this particular, now he's talking about the complete whole. That if you know all this, that is the complete whole. Knowledge of all that is knowledge of Krishna. Sometimes you think knowledge of Krishna means only knowledge of Krishna's relationships, pastimes. So that's nice, if you are pure. If you are in the Brahma Bhutas platform, yes, there's no need of knowing Chit, Achit, and Ishwara. You don't have to know the living entity, God and the material energy. If you're on the Brahma-Buddha platform, you already passed that. Then yes, you just hear about Krishna. Like the four Kumaras, you didn't have to explain to them about the material nature, or them as Brahman. You didn't have to explain. You just had to bring them in contact with the smell of the lotus feet of the Lord and the tulsi that's there. Then they got transcendental ecstasy. And so, because they are not attached, and they can analyze very nicely, they go, we are not connected with this material energy. So how is it we're feeling emotion? Because a liberated soul feels no emotion. There's no, because emotion is connected with the material world. Then they understood it's transcendental emotion. So if one's on that platform, yes, it is true. You don't need all this. But someone on that platform relishes this very much. Because it's transcendental. Anything transcendental is nice. Like that. That is the science. So here the complete whole means all these things are understood. Then you know Krishna. You don't know the jiva, you don't know Krishna. You don't know material energy, you don't know Krishna. You don't know time, you don't know Krishna. Right? Time here means material energy is dead matter. But we see manifestation. We see this building, fans are here turning, lights are burning. That's time. Because time element has entered, then there is manifestation. Otherwise, there's no manifestation. Material energy is dead. There would be no manifestation. And because it's time, therefore it only spins for a certain time, the building only stands for a certain amount of time, that door only stays open or closed a certain amount of time. So manifestation is time. This body is manifestation of time. It's here for a short time, and then it goes. So time is what manifests this whole material world. And then the living entities, their activities, how they perceive and try to enjoy this material energy, that is karma. Due to their polluted consciousness, they want to enjoy or exploit in some way the material energy as the controller and enjoyer. So that is the essence. That brings one down to the essence of all the practices of Krishna consciousness, is these two points, the polluted consciousness. In polluted consciousness, you have I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. These two are there. You remove those, you remove the material conditioning. Right? And not only the material conditioning, then you qualify yourself to serve Krishna. Because becoming liberated is not enough. We think if we just get out of this material world, that will be great. But we were not in the material world when we became envious of Krishna. We must remember that. We were on the transcendental platform when we became envious of Krishna. Because we didn't develop our love. Therefore, it's not enough to get liberated. We were liberated before, and we fell down. Because from the platform of liberation, one falls. Right? So unless one is cultivating, developing love for Krishna, then liberation will only bring you up to the middle point. And if there's no love for Krishna, you will not get to prema. So it's not enough. Therefore, these points have to be made. We are not the controller, we're not the enjoyer. Even the person on the Brahman platform, he thinks he is the controller, and he is enjoying that Brahmananda. He is God, he is Brahman. But no, there's a difference. So Krishna is the controller, Krishna is the enjoyer. That makes us as the servant. If that point is understood, then everything else in spiritual life can be based on that. If that's not understood, there's no foundation for spiritual life. Like that, very essential point. So here then, Krishna's different potencies, they are one of the aspects of completeness. So because they've come from Krishna, then it is complete. Anything that comes from Krishna is complete. It is being able to maintain itself, develop itself. It has all the elements it needs for its own continuance is there, because it's coming from Krishna. So that is being made here. Nothing more, nothing less. It's perfect. We can't do that. Therefore, another reason to understand Krishna is the Supreme. Krishna is God. Then, so now we've established the material energy, the living entity, the Lord. The Lord is the Lord of these potencies. Right? So now we're going on to the next main thing to understand is authority. Where does authority come from? What is authority? So continuing, all Vedic knowledge is infallible, and Hindus accept Vedic knowledge to be complete and infallible. For example, cow dung is the stool of an animal, and according to Smriti, or Vedic injunction, one touches the stool of an animal, he has to take a bath to purify himself. But in the Vedic scriptures, cow dung is considered to be a purifying agent. One might consider this to be contradictory, but it is accepted because it is Vedic injunction, and indeed, by accepting this, one will not commit a mistake. Subsequently, it has been proven by modern science that cow dung contains all antiseptic properties. So Vedic knowledge is complete because it is above all doubts and mistakes. Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. So we must accept authority. This is another main principle of Vedic life. Human life begins with inquiring. So if we inquire, then the next thing is, where do we inquire from? Where do we get that knowledge from? So it has to be from authority. And then naturally, then Krishna becomes the end of that line of authority. If there's no Krishna, then all other authorities don't have any meaning. So therefore, acceptance of authority, respect of authority, is very essential in spiritual life. If it's not there, then spiritual life is very weak. Like that. So one has to be able to accept authority. If not, it's not that you can accept one authority and leave another. No, authority is a tattva. Like that. It has to be accepted. The whole thing. Right? One may like or dislike the persons in the position of authority. That's another thing. That's the individual soul. But the position itself cannot be acted or spoken against. Otherwise, there is no basis for spiritual life, because at the end of that equation is Krishna. He is authority. Everybody else has their authority because of him. They are embodying a particular potency of Krishna. Right? So all these we see. Krishna is the original father. He's the original mother. He's the teacher. Right? He's the guru. He's the one who establishes Dharma. He's the Indra. He's the creator. He's the Brahma. He's the destroyer. He's the Shiva. Right? And he's the source of all these, is Sankarshan. Right? Sankarshan is coming from Balaram. Balaram is coming from Krishna. So if one doesn't accept one of these, one's not accepting Krishna's completeness. So this point here that Krishna is complete, by knowing all this knowledge, then means we have to know all this and accept all this. Like that. Otherwise, then we're not accepting Krishna. We're taking part Krishna that we like, and this part we don't like. Right? But it has to be accepted as Krishna. Otherwise, spiritual life doesn't function. So in the Vedic literatures, the Vedic culture, then acceptance of authority then is very, very important. You know? The mood of humility is very important, because that can mature into understanding I'm a devotee of Krishna. Right? Acceptance of authority is very important, because the end of the line is Krishna. Therefore you see, Hindu families, they all respect their mother and father and the teacher and that, but maybe they don't go much farther than that. Okay, guru is there, okay, that's all. They don't get much farther. You know, so many demigods are there, oh yes, you know. But it keeps going. So at least the minimum is there. Because then from that, it's very easy to accept the Lord. If you accept everybody up to what you know, then when you add in Krishna, it's very easy. If you don't accept any authority that you know of, right? Then when you add Krishna, he's just one more person to not accept. It's very easy. Right? If somebody brings you 10 sweets and you don't like any of them, if I bring you 11 sweets, there's a good chance you're not going to like that. You just don't like sweet. So then it doesn't matter what sweet I drink. You won't like it. So these are very essential principles. This principle of authority. And so then the point of the Vedic literatures, it's infallible. That's the first thing that must be accepted. It's not a matter of blind faith. It's a matter of it's come from God. God's perfect, so therefore it is perfect. Now it's a matter of us trying to understand it. If we don't understand it, it's not because there's imperfection in the Vedic literature. It's our lack of ability or understanding. I think that's explained later. But the point is that if we don't understand it, then it's a matter of trying to understand it. Try to pursue it. Try to find out. Like that. Anything that we don't understand that we want, then we pursue it. Right? I have heard that that very soon there's going to be some big feast somewhere. But I don't know. I don't know what feast, where, this, that. But if I'm interested in feast, I'll find out. I'll ask, have you heard about this feast? I don't know. I may ask this one. Finally, I'll get around. I'll find out. It's what I want to know. But if we don't want to know, then, what is this? I don't understand. It's thrown out. So this is the point being made here, is that the Vedic knowledge cannot be thrown out, even though it seems contradictory. It can never be thrown out. It means there's principles behind it that are there, like here, the example of the cow dung. If you touch stool, it's impure. But cow dung is pure. So the principle is cleanliness, right? The four pillars of your pious life, one of them is cleanliness. So cleanliness is the essence. So cleanliness is the essence, then there's no contradiction. Because cow dung is pure, so it's clean. But the other stool is not clean, therefore it's not touched. It's not that they're both stool. The principle is what's clean and what's not clean. Therefore, something may look contradictory in the Vedic literature, but that's because we're looking at a lower level. You look at a higher level, there's no contradiction. Right? You look, okay, here's Muslim, here's Hindu. They contradict. They have a different thing. They don't like each other. You go above that. Oh, they're human. Then it resolves. Right? Then there's humans and there's animals and this and that. This one eats that one. That one eats that. You go above that. Then there's soul. So the point is if we don't understand, it's because our consciousness is, or our realization is not on a high enough level. It's that simple. Problem is spiritual life is the actual reality check. And unfortunately, we may not always be interested in reality. Because reality then sometimes may not look so good in our favor. We may look foolish. Like that. That's the thing. If we're wrong, that's very difficult. If someone else is wrong, that is very easy to accommodate. Right? That's why it's such a critical point in anarthas, is criticizing others. This is a very essential point. Is that the criticism of others, or politics, you know, Gramya Kata, this, Lord Chaitanya warns against this. It's the essence of all everything else. It comes from the tongue. Too much eating then creates stomach, the problem, the stomach, then the genitals, so senses become wild. Or talking all kinds of nonsense and the mind becomes disturbed, then we have so much material desire we can't get it, that creates anger. So these are very essential points. So here is, it's never wrong. That has to be accepted. That the scriptures are not wrong. What is the purpose behind them and their application to us? It has to be applied in a different way. That this scripture here in this example it's giving doesn't apply to us. Right? It applies to someone else. Right? So this example of the cow dung, that is given by Lord Brahma. Like that. So this is taken from the Vedic literature. Also another example they give in this connection is about performing yajna, or sacrifice. Some authorities say it should be done before sunrise, some say it should be done at sunrise, and some say it should be done after sunrise. Right? So yajna should be done at any of those times. So one may think, well, this is contradictory. What's the actual right one? But it depends who you are. If you're a karmakandi that all you do is yajna, then in the Brahma Muhurta, you have to be doing yajna. Otherwise, where's it going to be the fruit of your karmakanda activities? Right? If you have other sadhana, right, like the jnani, he used to be doing other meditation and all that. So after that, then he'll do his yajna. Right? But for the devotee, he has his worship of the deity. So after the worship of the deity, then he does the yajna. So then he'll do it after sunrise. Because before sunrise, he has Mangalarti. Then he dresses the deities. Then he does the yajna. So it depends who you are. So there's no contradiction. The point is whatever is best for your sadhana, that is what has to be done. But you have to have enough knowledge to know who is doing what sadhana. Then these things. So in principle, the Vedic literatures, we must accept them as authority. They need to be accepted. Then Gita is the essence of this. So that's a very nice understanding. In the Vedas, you have four parts. You have the Samhita, which is the verses of the Veda, that have all the instructions and all the different stories and everything that's there. That's the Samhita. Then the second part of the Veda is the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas explain how to use those mantras in ritual to perform sacrifice, yajnas, and all these different activities. Then the third part is called Aranyakas. Then they explain the purpose behind the mantras. What is the secret or esoteric meanings of the mantras and the rituals? Then the fourth part is called Upanishad, which is the philosophical explanation of the Vedas. So now, then the Gita is the essence of the Vedas, of those Upanishads. So it's the most important of all the Upanishads. So if you know the Gita, you know the Veda. That is the point. So Gita basically is counted as Vedanta. And Bhagavatam, because it has been written after all the Vedic literatures are written, to give explanation of all the Vedic literatures. Therefore, it is Vedanta. Vedanta Sutra is also there to explain the Upanishads, but in sutra form. So it can be misunderstood. That's the problem. From the Vedanta, then we get so many different interpretations. Then, yeah. So these, we see that all these three are known as Vedanta. So of that, the most important is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the full explanation of the Vedanta. And the Bhagavad Gita gives us the keys to actually what is meant by the Vedanta. So by knowing Bhagavad Gita, then one can understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, here's what I was mentioning. Next paragraph. Vedic knowledge is not a question of research. Our research work is imperfect because we are researching things with imperfect senses. We have to accept perfect knowledge which comes down, as is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, by the parampara disciplic succession. We have to receive knowledge from the proper source in disciplic succession, beginning with the Supreme Spiritual Master, the Lord Himself, and handed down to a succession of spiritual masters. Arjuna, the student who took lessons from Lord Krishna, accepts everything that he says without contradicting him. One is not allowed to accept one portion of Bhagavad Gita and not another. No, we must accept Bhagavad Gita without interpretation, without deletion, and without our own whimsical participation in the matter. The Gita should be taken as the most perfect presentation of Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge is received from transcendental sources. And the first words were spoken by the Lord Himself. The words spoken by the Lord are different from the words spoken by a person of the mundane world who is infected with four defects. A mundaner, one, is sure to commit mistakes. Two, is invariably illusioned. Three, has the tendency to cheat others. And four, is limited by imperfect senses. With these four imperfections, one cannot deliver perfect information of all-pervading knowledge. So this is why we need to accept the knowledge. On our own, we will make mistakes. It means Until we're not conditioned, these four mistakes we will have. Maybe in a small amount, and maybe reconciled because we're trying to do it for Krishna. So Krishna takes care, he helps. He guides us. But that means then we have to be humble. As soon as we think we are the one that knows, we are the doer, then yes, you do. And then these nice four problems are there, making mistakes, illusion, cheating, and imperfect senses. But if we're surrendered to Krishna, then you see, even someone who's not very advanced, because of that surrender, whatever they do will be perfect, because it's connected to Krishna. They have some material imperfection, but Krishna is not worried about that. Nothing's ever perfect. Keshava Kashmiri, he spoke Sanskrit, poetry, that except for him and Mother Saraswati, no one else could understand. It was so elevated, so detailed. But Lord Chaitanya immediately found good points and bad points. So Keshava Kashmiri was thinking, how is this possible? Because no one knows what he knows. Because he has special blessing with Saraswati. You know, he's able to have her darshan, talk to her directly. So no one could defeat him. No one knows Sanskrit better than him. So he's defeated by a boy. So he thinks something must be wrong. I've committed some offense. Right? So basically his offense is he became proud. And he didn't see his knowledge in connection with the Lord. Therefore it was full of mistakes. He's an illusion. He's cheating. He's trying to say, I am the great scholar. No. He is simply the medium for this knowledge. Right? He has imperfect senses. All these things happen because he steps into it. Therefore, it's not a matter of our opinion or anything. It's a matter of, this is the Shastra. This is what it says. Like that. So then it has to be seen in this way. That's the basic principle that has to be there. Then, how it's applied, that's another thing. That's there. Someone may, because of their imperfection, misapply it. But that doesn't mean that the scripture is wrong, or the rule is wrong. What's wrong is our application of it. That is very important. You know, we cannot, because modern ideas that whatever man thinks of, he is very intelligent. So he knows better. Right? Now it's not as strong as it was before. I think back in the 50s, the idea came out that man-made is better than natural. So everything was man-made. Man-made food, man-made medicine, man-made clothes, everything. And then somewhere later in the, you know, 20, 30 years later, they kind of figured out, after so much, you know, use of it and other things, that actually naturals did have some advantages like that. You know, it was better for health and, you know, and all these different things. So then people are seeing, well, maybe man-made wasn't so great after all. So in the same way, as if we misinterpret, misapply because of our own imperfections, that does not mean that there's something wrong with the Vedic literatures itself. No, Vedic literatures are always perfect. Okay. What time is it? No? Is there any questions or comments? Or means the Brahma Samhita, you could hear? Brahma Samhita is giving you all the conclusions to all the different Vedic literatures. But the Gita is showing you how to get there. So you won't really understand Brahma Samhita unless you understand Gita. Because Brahma Samhita doesn't like take you through the steps of understanding you're not your body or the soul, who's God, this, that. Brahma Samhita is for someone who understands these, and now how they can understand deeper the conclusions. How to connect everything. right? Like in your Vedic literatures, different kinds of worship is there, right? They have Panchopasana, worship of Ganesh, Shiva, Durga, then Vishnu, and the sun, right? So then he shows how everything is connected to Krishna. Right? Everything. There's nothing that's not connected to Krishna. So the essential thing is connecting, the connection point. Like if you know all the Vedic literatures, and when you read Bhagavatam, you'll understand how it's the top. Because it shows you how to connect it to Krishna. Right? It means you have, in any of the Vedic literatures, they tell you how to connect it. But there's only a very small portion of it does that. A few verses. Maybe one section here and there. Out of a vast literature. Thousands and thousands of verses. There may be, 10, 20, 30 that actually tell you or point out that you have to connect it to the Lord. So most people don't notice that. They only notice the other few thousand. The technical points of how to understand and operate that literature. So then Bhagavatam connects everything. You see, all topics are discussed there. There's nothing left out. Everything is discussed, but it gives the essence, the actual connection to Krishna. Because when you connect it to Krishna, then it becomes alive. If it's not connected to Krishna, it's dead. So therefore, Bhagavatam then is like the perfection of that. And that shows also then how to live the lifestyle of one who connects. The knowledge of connection and how to live it. Bhagavad Gita points out that it's there. And this is the essential points of how you come to understand these conclusions. Brahma Samhita gives you those conclusions. The Bhagavatam takes it a step further because it shows those conclusions and shows the lifestyle of one who actually lives it. So then it becomes most essential. Right? And then Chaitanya Charitamrita then takes it a step further that specifically as a Gaudiya Vaishnava, how to live the instructions of Bhagavatam. So all these are essence. Your Gita, Bhagavatam, your Nectar of Devotion, your Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahma Samhita. These are all very essential books. Whatever is described in the Vedic literature is described there. So, okay? Anything else? No? 7? Okay, so it's 7 o'clock. Let's do it until. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaura.